And we welcome you this morning to the Antioch campus of Blue Valley Baptist Church. It is a thrill to have you with us. As I mentioned in my prayer, we are doing a series of messages on the subject of marriage. And that got me to thinking about the 26 or so years ago, 26 years in January, that Julie and I got married, and how little we had financially at the time. If you've been married any length of time at all, you probably have a story, which quite frankly you make worse than what it was, about how little you had when you first got married. But most of us don't start off with a lot as far as resources go. We were students at the time. I was a part-time seminary student. Julie was a college student. Her dad made very clear to me that when I asked for her hand in marriage, in the other hand would be all of her college tuition bills. And so I accepted both of those hands gladly. Again, I was a part-time seminary student, and I was gainfully employed as a youth pastor of a small Southern Baptist church in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. So there just wasn't a lot of extra to go around. And when I would go to seminary on Mondays, Julie would give me my cash allotment for the week, and it was $5. All right, and on that $5, I had to buy my snacks for the day because I was a growing boy, and then I would also use that for my meal that evening. Now, again, 26 years ago, but it was still $5 for crying out loud. I mean, it's not like I was buying a steak with $5. So there wasn't a lot there. And if I were to go through and ask you, you would share similar kinds of stories. We just didn't have a lot. And so that would lead us in conversation with one another to say, well, I wonder how we made it. I wonder how we were able to make it through. And the answer would boil down to the old adage, I guess we just lived on love, didn't we? Just lived on love. Quite frankly, that's what you do for the first few years. But a marriage will quickly starve to death living on love. And I'm not talking about financially. I'm talking about relationally. If you just try to live on love in your marriage relationship, you will starve to death. There has to be something more than love to keep a marriage strong. So what is that, you might ask? Well, it's something that Jimmy Stewart explained in one of my favorite movies. Now, I'm about to hopelessly age myself to a large majority of you, but one of my favorite movies is a movie called Shenandoah that stars Jimmy Stewart. First of all, raise your hand if you know who Jimmy Stewart is. All right, well, I feel better. All right, the movie Shenandoah came out in the 60s, and it's the story of a family during the Civil War. And Jimmy Stewart is the patriarch of a large family. His name is Charlie, and a young man named Sam comes to ask his permission to marry one of his daughters. And so he comes and says, I'd like permission to marry your daughter. And Charlie, Jimmy Stewart, says, why? This is an exact dialogue right here. He says, why? And Sam, the young man, comes and says, sir. And so Charlie says, why do you want to marry her? And Sam says, well, I love her, Mr. Anderson. And Charlie says, that's not good enough, Sam. And Sam says, I beg your pardon. And Charlie says, do you like her? And Sam says, I just said I, and then Charlie interrupts. He says, no, no, you just said you loved her. And then he says this great quote. I've used this in a wedding ceremony that is present in this room right now. I won't say who. He says, there's some difference between loving and liking. He says this, when I married Jenny's mother, I didn't love her. I liked her. Liked her a whole lot. I liked Martha for at least 3 years after we were married. And then one day it just dawned on me I loved her. I still do. I still do. Now he was on to something there. Love is not enough. You have to add to that like. You have to enjoy your spouse. You have to be their best friend. You have to have a relationship where you are in tune with one another and you enjoy one another. And we recognize that. There have been many people over the years sit in my office and say to me about one another, you know, I love them, but I don't like them very much. Now, what they are saying to me in that point in time is that we understand love's not enough. There's something wrong here because while we do have a commitment that we're not anxious to bail out of, we just don't seem to like one another. There has to be love and like together in order for a marriage to keep going strong. So the question becomes, how do we pull that off? And that's what we will explore today as we look at the Song of Songs. If you would please find the Song of Songs or the Song of Solomon, depending how it's recorded in your English translation, find chapter 4. We're going to look first at verses 7 through 11. Now, as you turn there, Song of Songs is the most unusual book in the Bible. For my money, it is more unusual than Revelation or Ezekiel or the last part of Daniel or any of those books that have the wild images that detail the end of time. And the reason it is the most unusual book in the Bible is that it is a collection of love poetry. It is not one poem, it is a collection of poems, all about the subject of love, all focusing on the courtship and the engagement and the marriage, its trials, difficulties, and celebration of one hypothetical couple. And it can be, I think, a marvelous encouragement to us today. So I hope you found the Song of Songs, chapter 4. Would you stand, please, as we honor the reading of God's Word, as I begin reading in verse 7. Song of Songs, chapter 4, beginning in verse 7. The man speaking to the bride, "You are altogether beautiful, my love. There's no flaw in you. Come with me from Lebanon, my bride. Come with me from Lebanon. Depart from the peak of Amana, from the peak of Senir and Hermon, from the dens of lions, from the mountains of leopards. You have captivated my heart, my sister, my bride. You have captivated my heart with one glance of your eyes, with one jewel of your necklace. How beautiful is your love, my sister, my bride. How much better is your love than wine and the fragrance of your oils than any spice. Your lips drip nectar, my bride. Honey and milk are under your tongue. The fragrance of your garments is like the fragrance of Lebanon." Thank you. You may be seated. Those verses begin to unpack for us the first thing I see as we survey the entire book together that we must do if we're going to add like to love. And it's this: we need to provide a steady stream of tenderness. Steady stream of tenderness. Now, what is tenderness exactly? Well, the dictionary provides this definition. It provides a definition which says that it means to show care and consideration. So by that very definition, we understand that tenderness is not me-centered. Tenderness is other-centered. And in the verses that we just read together, we see the man speaking words that are not centered on himself, but are instead centered on his beloved. Now, gentlemen, there are many things that are said in that passage of Scripture, which if we could learn to say with sincerity and without laughing our heads off, our wives might receive warmly. But there are some words that are of key importance for what we're talking about here today that I want to focus on in verse 10. Look at verse 10 again, if you would please. He says, "How beautiful is your love, my sister, my bride." Now, in that passage of Scripture that I just read to you, that phrase, "my sister, my bride," actually comes up twice. And I don't want you to be alarmed by that. That is not saying anything incestuous at all. In the ancient Near East, the word sister was a term of endearment. Both of my grandfathers were Southern men. And one of the things I noticed very early on is that they didn't call my grandmothers by their names, Leora, Melva. They didn't call them that. They called them Mom. Now, it wasn't because they actually had a belief that that was their mother or that they had some kind of Oedipal complex. What it meant was a term of endearment. That's what Southern men do. And for some dumb reason, I do that today. I mean, I rarely call Julie by her name, Julie. I call her Mom. That's my term of endearment. Her term of endearment is, I think, dummy for me. But it's a term of endearment. Now, I want you to notice in verse 10 how he attaches that to the word love. How beautiful is your love. Now, he's not saying what he says in other parts of the song. In other parts of the song, he is describing the physical beauty of his wife. But that's not what he's doing here. Here, he is speaking of her love. And he's saying that your feelings, our relationship, our commitment is to me a beautiful thing. And then he heightens the tenderness of that by calling her my sister, my bride. So what you have is you have this man understanding that to speak tenderly to his wife, he needs to focus on her feelings and celebrate their love for one another. But do not think that speaking tenderly is only the responsibility of the man in a relationship. We see in the song the woman giving her fair share of tender speaking to the man as well. In fact, an example of that is in chapter 2, verse 3. In chapter 2, verse 3, the woman says of her husband, "As an apple tree among the trees of the forest, so is my beloved among the young men. With great delight I sat in his shadow, and his fruit was sweet to my taste." Now, she is speaking tenderly, but she's speaking tenderness in a different way. She is speaking in ways that celebrate the man's strength and speaking in ways that celebrate his masculinity. And what we see here are archetypal examples of how the sexes process tenderness. In general, the females will celebrate and be moved by expressions of tenderness that talk about the commitment and the feelings that the couple has for one another. And in general, the man hears tenderness through his ego. He hears strength and he hears masculinity, and that is something that builds him up. So we have these kind of general archetypes that show up in the song, but understand something. You didn't marry an archetype. You married a person. And so while there are these general principles that may be true among the sexes, we all are in the business of decoding the language of tenderness that is processed by our spouse. And sometimes that can be difficult. Pastor Steve located this video, which maybe you've seen before, that kind of processes for us how difficult sometimes it is for us to speak tenderly to one another. Look at the screens.
It's just, there's all this pressure, you know? And sometimes it feels like it's right up on me and I can just feel it, like literally feel it in my head, and it's relentless. And I don't know if it's gonna stop. I mean, that's the thing that scares me the most, is that I don't know if it's ever gonna stop.
Yeah. Well, you do have a nail in your head.
It is not about the nail.
Are you sure? Because, I mean, I'll bet if we got that out of there...
Stop trying to fix it.
No, I'm not trying to fix it. I'm just pointing out that maybe the nail is causing...
You always do this. You always try to fix things when what I really need is for you to just listen. No,
see, I don't think that is what you need. I think what you need is to get the nail
out. See, you're not even listening now.
Okay, fine. I will listen. Fine.
It's just... Sometimes it's like there's this achy... I don't know what it is. And I'm not sleeping very well at all. And all my sweaters are snagged. I mean, all of them.
Yeah, that sounds really hard.
It is. Thank you. Ow!
Oh, come on. Ow. If you would just...
Don't!
Try to see things my way. Do I have to keep on talking till I can go?
Not that that's happened to any of us at all, but you did see in that video an example of how tenderness is processed. And we have to learn to decode that language as this couple is decoding that language for one another. Because speaking tenderly, lovingly, compassionately towards the one we love is part of how we build the bridge from just love and commitment to actually liking the person to whom we are committed. That's the first thing. Another thing that the song shows us is that in order to add like to love, you have to have a steadfast assurance of trust. A steadfast assurance of trust. Go back to chapter 4, if you would, please, and follow along as I continue to read in verse 12. Again, the man is speaking. He says, "A garden locked is my sister, my bride, a spring locked, a fountain sealed. Your shoots are an orchard of pomegranates with all the choicest fruits, henna with nard, nard and saffron, calamus and cinnamon, with all the trees of frankincense, myrrh and aloes, with all choice spices. A garden fountain, a well of living water, and flowing streams from Lebanon. Awake, O north wind, and come, O south wind. Blow upon my garden, let its spices flow." And then she speaks, "Let my beloved come to his garden and eat its choicest fruits." Now again, you probably don't have to be an English lit major to figure out the not so subtle point that this woman is sexually available to her husband. But don't miss the equal but stronger point that she is making. She is making, and it is being celebrated by her husband, that she's sexually available only to her husband. Her husband celebrates that she is a garden locked and a fountain sealed for all but him, an availability that she confirms at the end of verse 16. So don't let the sexual overtones of these verses overwhelm their main point. And the main point is trust. And where there is trust, there is like, and there is love. We have never lived in a world that is more threatening to a couple's trust. Jobs, especially the kinds of jobs that are held by Johnson County folk, require extended time apart and alone. And extended time apart and alone can lead to not so innocent and, in fact, downright dangerous social media interactions that can lead to active relational betrayal and physical betrayal. I didn't begin ministry with anything called the internet. I didn't begin ministry with mobile phones that weren't the size of diesel trucks. But by the time I was a pastor full-time, in 1996, the internet was beginning to come of age. And so it was when I was a pastor that I had, for the first time, an internet connection and an email address. And one of the very first emails I ever sent, as a matter of fact, it may have been the first email I ever sent, was sent to the man who was best man in my wedding. He was my youth pastor when I was growing up. Bear in mind, 1996. And so I emailed him. I said, "Ken, I have an email address. I'm on the internet for the first time." And he emailed me back, "Welcome to the online world, but listen to me." 1996. He said, "There are some dark places on the internet, and you need to discipline yourself to stay away from those places." 1996. And in the almost 20 years since, I have seen social media and I have seen the internet unravel marriages, and they've unraveled marriages at the point of trust. A spouse could no longer trust their spouse. And so if you want to develop a relationship where there is like, you need to focus on trust. And let me say something to you. Trust comes a long time before sexual exclusivity. It does. Trust is built at the lower levels. Trust is built with open and transparent communication with one another. It is living transparently with one another. Your spouse should have password codes for everything that you have access to. If you have a phone that's locked, your spouse should have access to your phone. Not because you're checking up on one another. If you get to that point, things are bad. But you should have those things available to one another because you don't have to check up on it. On one another. Things are free and open and transparent. You should do everything you can to communicate to the world that you are in an affectionate, obviously affectionate and exclusive commitment to your spouse. About a year ago, I think in the office, we were talking about another pastor who had fallen sexually with a parishioner. news story that was being run at the time. And I have heard my entire ministry career of men who have had advances made towards them by members of their church. And I said in the context of this conversation, in almost 30 years of ministry, that's never happened to me. And they said, well, obviously. But then someone said something to me that I didn't realize about myself, but it meant something to me, and I'll never forget it. They said, you carry yourself in a way that projects loudly to everyone around you that you're in an exclusive commitment, and this is never going to change. And men, do that. Women, do that. Wear a stupid wedding ring. You say, well, I can't. This isn't my first one either. The other one shrank like yours has. I don't know what happened. It got wet, I believe. But wear a wedding ring so that everywhere you go, people know there's something going on. You say, well, I can't because my job won't let me, the metal gets in the way, or because you work out a lot. They now have silicone-based wedding rings that if you are in a job that requires that you get dirty, or if you work out and don't want to tear it up working out, put that thing on. But that's a small thing that you can do to communicate to the world you're in an exclusive commitment. Not because you have to be checked up on, but because you're in a commitment with someone that you want everyone to know is exclusive. And that builds trust. And when there is trust, there is like. Here's the last thing I want to point out. If you're going to add like to love, you need to have a significant commitment of time. A significant commitment of time. I want you to find Song chapter 7, verses 11 through 13. The bride is speaking here, and she says, come, my beloved, let us go into the fields and lodge in the villages. Let us go out early to the vineyards and see whether the vines have budded, whether the grape blossoms have opened and the pomegranates are in bloom. There I will give you my love. The mandrakes give forth fragrance, and beside our doors are all choice fruits, new as well as old, which I have laid up for you, my beloved. Again, don't be so overwhelmed by the obvious sexual overtones that you miss that the woman here is inviting her beloved to come away with her, apart from everyday life, to spend time with one another. Ultimately, these verses communicate prioritizing time together, being with one another. When Julie and I were young parents, we lived in Tennessee. I pastored a small rural church. And quite literally, everybody else that we were related to was in another time zone, except my parents, who still lived in Oklahoma, which was still 600 miles away. We were by ourselves. And I will always be grateful for the senior adult members of Leoma Baptist Church in Leoma, Tennessee, who recognized that their young pastor and his young wife needed to have some time together on occasion. And so some of our favorite memories are of Vera Mae Shelton taking Abby, and Joy and Willard Box, or the Beddingfields taking Caleb, and Julie and I doing our Christmas shopping an hour away in Nashville and spending the night there, and then coming home. We were so busy that it would have been very easy for us not to prioritize time together. So people helped us do that. And because of an investment by others in us to do that, we built a value and a habit of spending time together. I'm not mature, you know that, but I'm emotionally healthy. I have friends that I enjoy spending time with. But I would rather spend time with Julie than anybody else. I would just rather be with her because she's my friend. And we have prioritized time together that has caused that friendship to grow. I like her. And that's what allows our love for one another to deepen. And so these things are shared with us in the song. Helpful hints of how to add like to love, because there is some difference between loving and liking. And we have to, if we're going to have that like, make a commitment like love is a commitment. And we'll have to do the things that the song tells us. We'll have to realize that like is a product of tenderness and trust and time. And liking in marriage means that though you'll have other people with whom you'll enjoy spending time, given the chance, you'll choose your spouse. That is what it means to like and love. Now maybe today you're here and the only thing that's keeping you together is a commitment that you made before God and everybody else however many years ago it was. And that's starting to weaken. And if I were to probe and ask, I would find out, you know, we just don't like each other anymore. Is it too late? No. It's not too late. I want to give you three things to do. Not going to show up on your screens, but just three things to do if you need like to reappear in marriage. First, make an effort to offer each other one compliment a day. One compliment a day. And make sure the compliment is, you know, you're not as obnoxious today as you were yesterday. That will not be helpful. But make a commitment to offer one compliment a day. There are studies that show that you can predict with great accuracy in the engagement period the number of put downs to compliments as to whether or not they'll be divorced in 5 years. Speak tenderly to one another. One compliment a day. Then this. Commit to one conversation a day. Get to know them. And by conversation, I don't mean trivia and I don't mean task. I mean, how are you? What did you do? Where are you being challenged? Those kinds of talks. Unpack your life for one another. Trust can grow in that way. And then this last thing. Make a commitment of time. One commitment of time a month. Now, you might think, well, and this may be part of the problem, we're so financially strapped right now, we can't do that. All right? Well, understand that if you have friends, you can say, I'll babysit your kids if you'll babysit mine. You can make that kind of swap so it doesn't cost you anything. And then there are things to do in Johnson County, Kansas, believe it or not, that don't cost you a dime. And you can go and do those things together. One time a month. One time a month. These are not magic bullets. But I tell you what is a magic bullet. Effort. Effort. I'm trying. We are working at doing this by speaking tenderly to one another. Establishing trust through transparency in conversation. Spending time with one another. And if effort will be made, I promise you this, to the glory of God, God will honor efforts to glory Him. And your marriage being healthy, the picture that it is intended to be of Christ's relationship to the church glorifies God. If you're trying to save it, you're going to honor God and God's going to show up. But the effort has to be yours.